Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Paul Kaharsky from PaulKaharsky.com and Outkick 360, which you can check out every day from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. PK, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Morning, gentlemen. I'm well. Hope same as... Same for you.
We are doing well. Appreciate you being with us this morning. So, PK, we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the show, the opportunity for former Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota in Atlanta. How do you view that situation for him? Do you think there's a chance that he could still prove to be a starting quarterback at the NFL level, or is he just kind of slated to be a backup at this point and this is just a transition period? How do you view this opportunity for Marcus down in Atlanta with Arthur Smith?
I think he'll be hurt within a month, and that we'll see the rookie there out of Cincinnati. I think that, you know, they just had to find somebody to hold things over until they could get going, and it's more a marriage of familiarity than desire. I think if Arthur Smith really had a choice, he wouldn't have chosen Marcus Mariota. He had to choose Marcus Mariota. I mean, the guy is held together with tape. He ran one play last year where they got excited about him in Las Vegas, and they were going to use him as kind of this counter to Carr, where they were going to do some fancy things with him, and he got hurt, and he was out for a month or 6 weeks. I'm not a Mariota guy at all. He refused to adapt here, to change his game, to change his habits, and that was after, I think, 3 years of me saying that I thought he had the mindset and the skill set to be a franchise guy, but he is not a franchise guy. I think he'll be a backup after this, and, you know, it could be a competent backup if he can stay healthy, but you need your backup to be a guaranteed healthy guy. And if you're not a guaranteed healthy guy as a backup, you're nobody.
So we've found someone who dislikes Mariota even more than Robbie. It's I do want to follow up on that, Paul. When you say adapt mindset / skill set, what do you mean by that?
Well, the way he approached when he was coming in, Joe, to what was bound to be his last year, I repeatedly found different ways to ask him, you know, are you going to change anything about your approach here? Are you going to change anything about your mindset here? Because your circumstances have changed and what you've done haven't worked. And he consistently said, no, going to do everything exactly the same. Not going to change a thing. And I just thought, well, there's a guy that doesn't get it. I mean, he's on the verge of losing his job. They've brought in a guy who could replace him on the way. The contract is coming up, and he thinks everything's fine. He's just going to go about things the exact same way, and they haven't worked. You know, the one whole change he made in his whole time here was he decided it wasn't a good idea not to come out for warm-ups before games, before the official warm-ups before games, which is virtually unheard of, except if you've got a, you know, Miami guy in a snowy situation. Samari Roll used to, you know, not even come out for official warm-ups in Cleveland if it was snowing. But Mariota, I don't know if you'd heard that story. You know, used to not even come out to stretch or warm up or do anything until, you know, the official warm-ups 50 minutes before the game. That was the one thing he changed in his approach. Otherwise, he was rather stubborn.
And his presses were quite revealing.
Yes, yes, there's no question about that. Paul, I'm interested for your thoughts on this. You've written about this week at paulkaharski.com. We've talked so much about the cornerback group for the Titans and the youth that they have there. But I will say, when I look at Caleb Farley and Roger McCreary and, you know, Elijah Molden, there's a lot of youth, but there's also a lot of talent as well. My question for you is, do you think that this could eventually, as the season progresses for the Titans, turn into a position of strength for them?
Well, I worry about Farley. I think everybody should worry about Farley. The combination of not just that he's coming off an ACL, and we've seen how slow that could be, though he did it very early. You know, he's injury prone, I think it's fair to say, beyond that, with what we've seen. The back injury was serious before that, and that's not all that he had in college. And then, you know, not a ton of cornerback experience beyond that. Rex Rhodes' boy Glennon likes to really give him a lot of credit for that. He's going to give him like a 3-year runway because he hasn't played a lot of cornerback. But I think, you know, I look back at the Bucks and what I wrote this year, and, you know, Carlton Davis and Sean Murphy Bunting were really inexperienced young guys in their Super Bowl year. And I think if you've got a really good defensive front the way the Titans do, you can win a championship with inexperience on the back end if you've got talented and athletic guys. So, you know, if McCreary is what he should be as a second-round pick, and the Titans don't always get what they should there, you know, and if they stay healthy, and that caveat goes on everything, I think they could, that group could be, you know, more than enough to win with there. Once it sorts out who starts, and they've got some flexibility, more flexibility than usual into who can pop inside, and virtually all of them can play inside and out. So it's a little bit encouraging. As long as they stay healthy, I think it could be part of a winning formula, particularly on defense. Now, I don't know if the defense overall can be good enough to overcome what I fear could happen on offense. That's the big overall question.
So you get mad at something Glennon writes, and now it's Rex Rhodes' boy Glennon. So that, somehow that's like indirectly my fault now. Is that where
we're
going?
Yeah, that's really something for me to make Glennon your boy when I've been with Glennon since like 97.
Exactly. You guys are the two Muppets guys on the balcony. We've talked about this, Paul, but I just want to get your check at this point. A month from camp, we know that basically you've got four people, you know, competing for two spots, and I'm not sure that any of the four are NFL starting caliber offensive linemen. And then we know that the receiver room is problematic right now. So do you have any different feeling on, and I understand what you're going to say, who's out there, who would you go get, but do you have any different feeling on the idea of a veteran ad at either spot? And then let me follow up with that to make this really long. Which of those two positions concerns you most? I think they're clearly the top two concerns.
Who's out there? Who are you going to go get? That's a good question as to which one is the bigger concern. I think they've got more, off the top of my head, Joe, I feel like they've got better options on the offensive line, as ridiculous as that sounds. I mean, they certainly have more faith in Aaron Brewer than they do in some of those receivers, I think. And if Aaron Brewer can't do it, I think they like Jamarco Jones, and I think Nicholas Petit Frere is, you know, obviously a work in progress, but encouraging. Don't fall in the trap of being confident about Dylan Raiens at this point, while he was kind of the de facto right tackle. Nobody means less, not in pads, than he does. I've got a piece coming about kind of his attitude about the whole thing. Receivers, look, I wrote this week, they're back to that place, you know, with the uncertainty at receivers that they've had for so many years. It's remarkable that it's kind of masked the whole thing, because outside linebacker slash edge rusher used to be the other position that we always had concern about, to a lesser degree, because, you know, there was Javon Kearse, there was Kyle Vandenbosch, there was even Jason Babin. But they've fixed that. I mean, they don't have a singular guy, but they've got three outside linebackers who are, you know, collectively great. But I'm more concerned, I think, about wide receiver, just because it's a wide receiver league, right? The quarterback can make up for the offensive line, and Derrick Henry can make up for the offensive line to a degree. But you can't fake wide receiver in this league where weapons are so important. And after Robert Woods, you don't have a single guy that you're certain is going to be any kind of threat. So they're going to have to scheme it up, game it up, and pray that these guys develop. And I think most people share my lack of confidence.
I'm so glad that Dylan Raiens came up. What is up with your Cindy Brady quote tweet of Dylan Raiens a few weeks ago? Like, what? Why do you waste your time with things like this?
Remind me. Yeah, I mean, there are certain things about myself that I just can't help, Joe. I was just talking to my wife the other day about how I wake up with automatic negative thoughts, and I'm really working on that. But what was my Cindy Brady tweet?
I don't have it in front of me, but Dylan Raiens was making some joke like, I'm like the starter, I'm guarding the Gatorade, whatever. He's like tweeting at Will Compton or something, and you were like, Titans fans, is this who you want to represent your franchise?
He's not serious. I mean, Dylan Raiens says nothing of substance and won't say anything about wanting to seize the job. But then he's on there just hamming it. His personality is so difficult for me to handle. But I just need to not tweet on stuff like that, because Titans fans are so generally stupid that they will defend the worst player on the team. How dare you say something negative about our second-round pick who isn't coming close to living up to expectations and may be the call of our downfall? We will defend his honor no matter what. Don't go so far as to challenge Isaiah Wilson, or we'll really come after you.
This is at least some good time for introspection, I feel like. I think we've made progress today.
I think we have to. PK, last thing for you here. I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. Basically, it's like a general state of the media question, because, you know, the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup this week, and they've got, you know, journalists tweeting out photos of, like, holding the cup over their head and talking about trying to hug players. I'm just interested, like, do you think homerism is a big problem in today's media? Like, how do you view the current state of media today in 2022?
Let's set 10 minutes aside for this answer.
It is a giant problem, a massive problem. Who is a legitimate reporter? Rex Rhodes not full-time on the Preds by any means. Who's the singular legitimate reporter on the Nashville Predators in Tennessee now after Adam Vingan lost his job? There isn't one.
Yeah.
There is not a single journalistic reporter covering the Nashville Predators in Tennessee who isn't cheering for them in the press box.
That's not true. Who is it? Paul Skrbina isn't waving his gold foam finger up on press row.
Who's rating Paul Skrbina? Zero people.
So now we're going to let you see. Now you let him take shots at the Tennessee. Fine, go ahead. You want to say something about Jason Wolf? Go rip on Jason Wolf.
Okay, I take it back. Paul Skrbina is legitimate. He's got no audience. He doesn't.
I don't know his audience, but he works for the Tennessee. I bet he has some level of audience.
Well, he's going to get a bigger audience now if there are any Preds fans who want to read anybody but a cheerleader.
Walkarski. Walkarski.com.
That's it. You had so many things you could have gone here with.
Stanley Cup. Sorry?
There were so many ways you could have taken that. I this is why I need the Titans to win it all, because you're going to rip your shirt off and just like make out with the Lombardi. It's going to be amazing. And then the next day on Stilly and Pauly, it's going to be 4 hours of recap. It is going to be amazing.
That's absolutely ridiculous. If the Titans won the Lombardi Trophy, I would not lift it over my head. I would be happy for the city. I would be happy for a certain degree of people over there. There are other people over there that seeing them next to the Lombardi Trophy would make me throw up.
Walkarski from Walkarski.com and Outkick 360, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. PK, great stuff as always. You can catch you today at from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan.
Good day, boys. Good day.
Absolutely. Paul Kaharski.
Thanks, PK.
Our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your reaction, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Paul Kaharski for joining us on the program. He joins us every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. I thought he'd go a little deeper with the homerism in media. That's right up his alley.
Yeah, well, yeah, you could go on and on about that. I like how he thought I was serious about him, you know, ripping his shirt off and kissing the Lombardi. I like that. And also, he's now texting me the people who would make him puke if they were standing next to Lombardi. I won't share those names, though. By the way, you know, flatly disagree with him on the you know, there's no one who covers the press. Yeah, this is also what happens.
Yeah.
Well, this was what happens too. Like, if when you have people who are like strictly cover, like Titans or strictly cover Preds, or this probably happens in other cities like this too. It's like, well, that press corps is, oh, they're such homers. You know, it's like you get protective of your own press corps.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I know it's a shocker that Kaharski might exaggerate things a little bit, but yeah, come on.
Beautiful stuff. It has been an interesting week, like just watching the Avs media hold the cup over their head and talk about hugging players and all this other stuff. It's like, that's why, honestly, when the Norris Trophy vote came out, I'll just be totally transparent with you. When I saw that somebody left Yossi off the ballot entirely, I was like, my God, the Avs media has struck again.
No, I did too.
I was shocked it wasn't one of them. I really was.
Yeah, no, I did too. And by the way, it was Scott Powers.
Yes, it was.
Shout out to Scott. We haven't talked about him in a few days.
Shout out Scott.
and not for any sinister reason, which frankly makes it better. It does make it better than like the homer who is such a homer that he or she is trying to use a vote to, you know, alter the results of a vote, but still pretty bad. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The Unrivaled documentary came out, of course, this week. And if you haven't seen it, if you like hockey at all, watch it. It's awesome. You don't have to care like about the Red Wings Avs rivalry like I did to think it's awesome. But I will say it does remind me, speaking of homer media, so my buddy Bob Wanowski Wojo, who's been a Detroit news columnist forever, you know, he was interviewed for it, and you know, like, he wrote this column, and it was like put on the front page of like a wanted Claude Lemieux. And then Chris Vanini, friend of the show, he tweeted out a picture of, I guess, the Free Press. I don't remember this. They had like a cutout voodoo doll of Patrick Waugh, and like the number on the back of the jersey was 666, you know? Yeah. I mean, that like stuff like that, it did get pretty homery. I mean, gosh, I need to go back and read some Kisla columns from then.
God.
I don't know if Kisla was a columnist at that point yet, if he had gotten to columnist, but if he was, holy crap, what did he write about the Red Wings back then? And like Claude Lemieux with his halo on his head. My goodness. Again, Mark Kisla's a nice guy. But like some of the stuff he wrote about Nashville 4 years ago, which I actually then wrote about in the Tennessean, which, by the way, you probably could point at me and say you're being a bit of a homer, but it was like, dude, please stop falling to these.
It
was so bad.
Yeah.
And then this year, Kisla's got the Ryan Johansson stick is in his mind is totally intentional. Mm-hmm. And he's like tweeting out video of it. I mean, what are you talking about? It's quite a crew. That's quite a crew, but they won the cup. So
yes, they did.
Yeah, I mean, where's Kisla's name on the cup as well?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, you know, look, the landscape of the coverage of your favorite teams or the media landscape has changed. Like, you know, it's a different time. Like, there's people have access to Twitter. You can make a website at the drop of a hat. Like, I mean, look, I got my start in this business because I was 18 years old. And I decided to make my own hockey website. So it's just it's a different time now that we're living in. So the traditional objective newspaper reporter from back in the day, I'm not saying it's a thing of the past, no. But it's just way different now than it used to be. So like, it's not ever going to be the same. But look, there's always been homerism to some degree when you go back through the media. I don't think there's any question about that, but it is, I think it's probably just a little bit more prevalent now with social media. It's been quite something this week.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think that's an excuse for those guys. And you know,
I don't either.
I still think there's plenty of objective, and it doesn't have to be the newspaper reporter. It could be the TV reporter or the internet. I think there's plenty of objective people who do it the right way. I mean, you know, look. Let's take your example. Okay, so you grew up as a kid. You rooted for the Preds. You started a blog. Okay, was it a blog?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, all right. I love blogs.
Oh, yeah,
I miss I miss blogs. I miss my Hey Joe blog from back in the day at the Lansing State Journal. But so then you start covering the team, and you do it the right way. I went to Michigan State, so I cheered when I was – before I got into, the student paper, I went to – freaking games and cheered, and then it's like, okay, I'm not going to do this crap anymore, and then it gets beaten out of you for the most part.
This is why I don't work in Lexington.
Yeah, it got beaten out of me within about a week and a half. I was like, all right, this is my job.
Do you want to do this? Because if you want to do this, now look, I think there's another part of this conversation we had. I do think that fans like the fan perspective. I mean, I think there's value in that, right? So I think there's still room for that. But even within that, okay, so some of the guys who have been up on Press Row, who I think like a PK or a Jared, the Stillian Pauly show stars, would probably rip on, like Bradford and Martel and Gover, okay? Dude, if that gone all the way to the Preds winning the Cup, those guys would have been professional. Absolutely 100% professional about it. Yeah. They absolutely would have been. I have no question in my mind. So, you know, it's just, when I saw this week, I had a problem with it. And you're right that it's different. There's a lot of blurred lines, and there is probably a lot more kind of like fan podcasts and things like that. And even look, like on our station, I appreciate Jared's perspective I've seen Jared at a game. I've been in a box with Jared. He was cheering for the Preds.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't do that, but I mean, I think that there's room for both things, but it's just when it comes that time to do your job, like you have to be able to call balls and strikes still.
We'll continue this discussion. We'll get to Rob in Nashville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, coming up next as well. By the way, DJ Burnside on Twitter has photoshopped Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh over PK's face on our little graphic that we put up. So you can check that out as well. I have just retweeted that. So you can check that out as well.
Wow,
we'll continue the conversation.
Beautiful.
Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are your racing station, 102.5, 106.3. The Game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 1 o'clock for the Quick Trip 250. You can also join Chase McCabe every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock for Chasing Checkers as he talks to the drivers and gets you set for the racing weekend. NASCAR on 102.5, 106.3. The Game is presented by the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Rob from Nashville. Rob, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Always thanks and good morning. I was thinking about the Homerism commentary, and it seems to me that in Nashville there is a couple people that do it very well. And if you think about it, Terry Crisp, old-timer, but nonetheless, does it very well. He is critical, but he puts a nice spin on it. Sure, he's a bit of a homer, right? He's cheering for the Preds, but he's not shy to call it out, right? He's not shy to call out what's wrong. You know, I could tell you right now his last take on the defense and poor decision-making and excellent points without putting people down. They probably know it themselves. And it harkens back to the day. I'm from Montreal, and I used to really love reading the Gazette and Red Fisher and his take, and he was brutal on the Canadians. Brutal, but to a point where he was right. And when he's right, and the writing is so crisp and so clean, and that's to my next point, is you can put any Yahoo in front of a computer and write a point, and unfortunately the level of writing has dropped and the level of criticism has dropped, and you do have homers kissing the cup and hugging players, which I think is a joke.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. We appreciate it. I mean, look, you know, Liam on the text line says, sports are inherently entertainment. As a fan, I find it boring for journalists to remove the emotion of pulling for a team from their coverage. You aren't covering global thermonuclear war. Have some fun and be objective. It can be both. Like, look, I do think there's value in not losing the emotion of the game. Like, you know, you don't want to be some robot out there, but I don't like you're a fandom of a team, like influencing the way you cover it. Like, you should be able to be objective. And honestly, like, sports fans, like, I don't think you should want somebody covering your team who can't be critical and like who can't tell you how it is. Like, to me, that's a disservice to you, the fan. Just my thoughts on it.
Yeah. Look, I mean, to me, you need to cover the emotion. You need to understand. And this is where it's actually much easier to do the job today, in my opinion. You need to understand how the fans feel about things, and you need to be connected to them. That was harder as an old person who used to write for newspapers, where like your feedback would be like if someone called the office or a letter to the editor. Yeah. I mean, it's very easy to kind of have a you have to be careful because social media can skew things, as we've talked about many times, but it's important to know how the fans feel and to think of the fans, because you are working for the fans, and to cover that emotion. And I mean, those moments, those big moments, like, you gotta, again, what's your advantage? Like, why do you have value? Because you are behind the scenes in these situations where you can get a conversation, a scene that no one else has, and the fans want to read about it. So if you're walking around like a jackass with the cup over your head and you don't have a notebook, you're probably screwing up, right? I mean, but like, that's to me is like do your job. But also I would say about the fan covering a team issue, I agree. Like, you definitely want, people are going to be critical. The thing that can happen also though with fans covering teams is they can be overly critical. I mean, you know, like it's, I think sometimes if you're emotionally tied into something, it can be hard to pull yourself back and look at it objectively.
Correct.
So there's two sides of that. There's like the super, like, my team, I mean, it's kind of like different kinds of fans, right? The sunshine blower, like, my team can do no wrong, it'll be all right, you know, you're being too critical, or like, everything sucks.
Constant doom and gloomer. Yes.
Right. So, but I think there's room for all of it. This, for me, I'll tell you, growing up as a fan, like a fan of the Detroit freaking Lions.
Restore the roar.
Sad relic. Restore the roar. on Monday mornings, I was absolutely, even going like back to like college, I'm Lions had a horrible loss. I am buying the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News. And these columnists, you better be smoking these guys for what they did. Like, I want the thank you. You know, I want to know what fill in the name, you know, Mitch Albom, Drew Sharp, Bob, well, Wojo. I want to know what you think about it. And you better be tough on these guys because they ruined my Sunday, right? I mean, I think people want that.
Yeah. No, I think some people also want the other way of
to be told everything's okay.
Like, I think there's a lot true. Of that goes on out there as well. Joe, real quickly, I do want to get your thoughts on this because PK wrote about this week at paulkaharski.com about corners. And we've talked so much about Farley and McCreary and all this stuff. I started thinking about this last night. You know, nobody saw the pass rush for the Titans coming last year. I mean, they were just one of the previous year were one of the worst teams in the history of the league in terms of getting after the quarterback and sacking the quarterback. Now, they did bring in Bud Dupree, and they did bring in Denico Autry. We thought it would be better. I don't think anybody anticipated it turning into what it turned into for the Titans last year. I will say, I look at the cornerback room. There's not a ton of experience. There is a lot of talent in that cornerback room. I wonder, could the cornerback room for the Titans take a similar trajectory this year as the pass rush did last year for the Titans in terms of, you know, there's talent there. There's not huge expectations for it. Do you think that could happen with this group in terms of it becoming eventually maybe not the position of strength like the pass rush did last year, but a pretty solid position of strength for the Titans as it relates to the picture of the whole football team?
Well, if it does, I think this team could win 11, 12 games even with a very average offense. It's hard for me to – if that happens, imagine this defense being anything but like right around the top three or four in the league.
Yeah.
And so if you look at how it happened last year, you had Jeffrey Simmons taking a pretty significant step. Again, I don't think he had a bad 2020, but he had a dominant 2021 after having a solid 2020. I mean, after 2020, still didn't know for sure. Okay, so where are things going with Jeffrey Simmons? Is he going to be a great player or just a good player? I think now you think he's going to be a great player. So he takes a big step. Harold Landry has his best season and takes another step as a player. You know, Dupree wasn't even that big of a factor in this, but he still was there. I still think at times you got more out of him than you had. Well, you certainly got more out of him than you had, like, from, I don't know, Vic freaking Beasley. And then
– Reed.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. And then Autry is the most underrated part of it. So one really high impact add and two guys who, well, to borrow a Vrabel phrase, went from good to great, at least from one season to the other. So can you have – is there a similar type of situation? The thing is, you really are adding two people. Really, you're adding McCreary and Farley.
Yeah,
I mean, I know Farley was on the field early last year, but he hadn't done much in camp, and he really wasn't making much impact even before the ACL. But if those guys can be like, I guess, Dupree and Landry, and, you know, a Molden can be like one of those guys who took a big step, or really Molden can be like Fulton, right, year one to year two. Well, you may really have something there.
Well, and I would say this too, like another thing is Fulton himself. This is year three for him.
Yeah.
He was really good last year. Is there another level for him? I mean, he'll be 24 coming up in September. So it's not like he's getting old or anything. Like, can he take his game? I thought he was really good last year. Can he be great? Like, can he be a shutdown corner in this league? I don't know. Like, I'm really interested to find out what that looks like this year.
And that's the thing about this team. I would still make the case that cornerback is the third most concerning position, just because I agree with Kaharski. I mean, it is a concern with Farley. You don't know. You're talking about a rookie. And, you know, you also don't know with Molden. You don't know if Molden's going to take a big step. Like, there's still a lot of unknown. and some decent, you know, you have Jackson and Screen as some solid, you know, veteran help, but you would rather those guys be that, just that, you know, veteran help. If they're out in the field a ton, you know, there's some limitations there. But if that's your third most concerning position, then that's a pretty good football team.
Oh, and also
top to bottom.
And I'm not saying that these guys are superstars or anything, but depth wise, you do have Buster Screen. You do have Chris Jackson. Like, you've got some guys that have played significant snaps at that position that you feel okay about.
Yeah, the depth there actually, I mean, the depth there is better than at safety and inside linebacker.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if you don't have starter quality players, that's, I think you know you're going to have that at every other position. You don't know at corner.
Coming up next, it is time for The Choice Is Yours. Robbie Stanley, myself, in the questions chair today. We'll get to that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And it is that time of the day, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. As always, we'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. I am in the questions chair today. Would we like to begin with sports or non-sports?
Non-sports.
Non-sports? All right. Got the 4th of July coming up on Monday. The question very simply is, what is your favorite 4th of July tradition? That could involve activities. It could involve food. Take it however you want to take it.
Well, recent tradition in my neighborhood, we call it thunder.
Oh, boy.
It's quite a fun time. It was like our first day here 6 years ago. It was like, oh, wow. So there's like dunk tanks and slides and free beer. No kidding. And amazing fireworks. But I mean, my answer's got to be fireworks. And I'm not all that into them now. But as a kid, the excitement of buying fireworks, like fireworks, you know, the shows are fine. But as a kid, like jumping jacks or lady fingers, you know, Roman candles, I mean, massive. Oh yeah, massive excitement. Oh, and yeah. We'd like, you know, I mean, bottle rockets, and of course we would do terrible kid things like shoot bottle rockets at each other and light entire things of jumping jacks and let them just fly around and see if they could hit your buddy in the head. Not great stuff, but that's got to be my answer.
Okay, Michelle.
So mine, I have 13 cousins and we all live in upstate New York. All went to high school together. So every year we would go over to my grandparents, and since then we would do like the parade and everything like that. And then we've moved over to my aunt's. So I'm so excited to go see them this week and I get to be home. But it's basically all of us, you know, just chilling by the pool, going to the parade, and it's all just walkable in their neighborhood. And then they do a huge fireworks show. But just like having, you know, a cookout by the pool, just enjoying some sun and family time and drinking some beer.
There you go. Mine's by the pool too. I'm by the pool every July 4th. Hendersonville, they've got a Freedom Fest that they do every July 3rd. So I always enjoy that. It's a big festival that they do at Drake's Creek Park. So I'll be at that this weekend. Looking forward to that. And, you know, Joe, typically I'm with you. Like, I'm a big fan of shooting my own fireworks. We spend an ungodly amount of money on fireworks every year. It is a little dry this year, so I'm not sure that's happening this year. Like, I don't want to burn my new house that I just bought on fire. So may not do that.
That's understandable. And I got to say, this is one of those do as I say, not as I do things as a parent, because as a kid, I was allowed to do all this firework stuff. And we kind of, I sort of stopped doing it with kids, you know?
Yeah.
You can't even buy them in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you can find them.
Well, you can find them. I know.
I know a guy. I give you a
name. Well, you can get them like somewhere else and shoot them off in New York, but you can't actually purchase them. It's weird.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All right, moving on to sports. In honor of Unrivaled, which we've talked a lot about this week here on the show, your favorite rivalry of all time. It could be individual rivalry, sports team rivalry, your favorite rivalry of all time. Joe, is it Colorado-Detroit?
It's awfully good. I think about that. I think so. It's like this is. It's funny. This kind of goes with the fan media discussion because, growing up as a fan, you know, Avs, Wings. I mean, Pistons, Celtics, Bulls. I mean, the Pistons Bulls wasn't as great. The Pistons won 3 of 4 against Jordan in the playoffs. So,
ridiculous.
It was kind of lopsided. Yeah. But, you know, it was fun to see Jordan try. But I got to say, I'm going to go on the media side. It's more media side because as a kid, I really was. As a kid, it was like, whichever team is better is who I prefer to win. But as a media person, seeing a lot of this stuff up close, including some of the most unhinged, insane behavior from a human I've ever seen from Taylor Lewan in some of these games. The Michigan-Michigan State football rivalry is, I think, underrated for what it is. A retiring Big Ten official once told me, I wrote this, I went to an officials convention. He's like, you know, Michigan-Ohio State is the rivalry everybody talks about. It's great. It's a big-time game. But it's so much harder to officiate Michigan-Michigan State. It's such a more physical game, so much more hatred. It's in-state. You can't fake in-state. There's a different level when you are living around people, and it's a constant complaint. As a media member, being accused of being like part of the blue wall and Michigan conspiracy, it's got to be that. It's amazing. It really is great.
Michelle, your favorite rivalry of all time?
Okay, so as you guys know, in upstate New York, I have no professional teams near me, so I'm kind of just have like random ones all over. And I never was really, really invested, I would say, into a professional team. So my biggest rivalry, when I got to Kentucky, you know, an SEC school, I was just fascinated at how intense the Louisville-UK rivalry is. Like Joe said, the in-state rivalries, especially at the college level, it's just really unlike no other. Like you could, one team could be ranked top 5 and the other could not even be ranked, but it doesn't even matter. The rivalry, everyone shows out for those games. They're always so intense. Everyone travels. So that's definitely got to be mine. And I would just like to say, L's down, go BBM.
There you go. I have 3 answers. So I'll go through them real quick. Number one, Tennessee, Florida, late 90s, early 2000s football. It's hard to beat. It was pretty awesome. It pretty much decided the SEC every year for a span there. So it's been a long time since we've seen those two at that level together. But late 90s, early 2000s, Tennessee, Florida was pretty awesome. So that's my college answer. Pro answer is definitely Packers, Bears, even though that hadn't been much of a rivalry as of late. As
yeah, neither has Tennessee, Florida.
In full. Well, that's true. Tennessee, Tennessee, Green Bay, and full ownership of the Bears at this point. And then, of course, what I could only assume to be this time of year, Joe, the rivalry of Sydney and Melbourne in Australian rules football. I assume that it's incredible. So those are my 3.
So glad you mentioned that one.
Well,
yeah.
I just know what a big deal that is this time of year. All right, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. I was going to take a shot at Calipari, but that's fine. We don't have time.
Back to non-sports. All right, which television game show would you most want to participate in and why? Which television game show would you most want to participate in and why? I'll start on this one. It's Family Feud, number one, because I think I'd be really good at it, and number two, because I'm not quite sure what my family would say, so that could either end up really poorly for us or it could go really well, and we could put together a run on Family Feud. So Family Feud is my top answer.
The answer I'd like to be would be Jeopardy, because like I have this, like I'd do well, but I probably wouldn't do all that well. So the real answer, just because like chance of success, would be Wheel of Fortune. I absolutely crush Wheel of Fortune, crush it from my couch. So
National legend Pat Sajak, by the way.
Well, also, I used to have a poster of Vanna White as a child, a teenager. So
yeah, teenager. Don't take say
that,
child.
Take that for yeah. Like as like a 13-year-old. So take that for what you will.
There you go.
So Michelle? I would like to say, you know, Jeopardy too, but I just know I would be so incredibly bad. I'm so bad at trivia or any of that. Family Feud would be fun, but I feel like I would like swear or something and get really frustrated and fight with my family. But all my family members, friends make fun of me because I'm really like unathletic. So I would love to be on Wipeout. You guys know that show?
Oh, yeah.
And it's where you do all these insane, like you have like a life vest on and do all this insane challenges and run over it. And I feel like I would just be great TV. Like, I would love to watch it back and laugh at myself trying to do all of this stuff.
That's a good, I like that. That reminds me, real quick shout out, honorable mention, Double Dare.
Oh, yeah.
If Double you know, you know.
I don't know.
Could go Fear Factor. That'd be something.
There's some gross stuff on there.
That's the one I would stay away from. All right, last one. Other than AJ Brown, which former Titan that has departed in the last 2 years do they or will they most miss? So AJ Brown would be the obvious answer here, so you can't say him. Other than him, which former Titan that has departed in the last 2 years do they or will they most miss? So you could include Roger Saffold in that if you wanted to. Joe, I'll start with you.
Yeah, like, I mean, I do look at this year and I look at this roster and I say, man, Corey Davis could help this team a lot.
I thought about that.
But I think I'm going to go with Saffold. Not 100% all the time, increasingly injury concerns. And go back and watch some of those games last year and what he was doing, just utterly just clearing people out and multiple people out, huge lanes. I mean, the guy is a freak as a run blocker. And it's just he fits what they do so well. You know, he's a cap casualty is what he is. And I get it, but I think they're going to really miss him.
Michelle?
Yeah, Roger Saffold was the first person who came to mind for me, especially with the big question mark on the O-line this year. Yeah, I'm going to go Roger Saffold pretty much for everything Joe said.
Okay. I thought Saffold is in consideration. You know, Jonnu Smith to me is a guy that I know they've got Hooper now and you feel good about it, but we still have not seen Austin Hooper on the field in a game for the Titans yet. So Jonnu Smith is going to be my answer. I did think about, but I think the two-year window has now passed. Like Ryan Succop was literally, I was thinking about that, but I think it's been more than 2 years now. So
it has been, but it lives on.
It does.
Although Big Bone Randy.
Hey, Randy will be fine.
Has helped cushion the blow a bit.
Yeah, no question about it. This has been The Choice Is Yours. You can check it out every Wednesday at 8:45 here on Robbie and Rex Row. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jim Diamond from the Associated Press. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators, the Philip Forsberg contract situation, and maybe some moves the Predators could make this offseason. All that ahead, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.